Who is psyched up for Christmas? Come on. Come on, kids. Are you psyched up for Christmas? Come on, make a noise. Make a noise. No? Okay. I got to tell you, I love Christmas. I made a little list here of the things I like about Christmas. And you look at the bottom, you'll see a list of the things I don't like about Christmas. But actually, that list is so small you can't see it. But I love the cookies. I love fireplaces, presents, stockings, winter beer, carols, hymns. I really love the spirit that's in the air. You know, even though traffic is much more crowded and there's a lot of more cars on the road, it's still people are more courteous. People are more forgiving. They're more gracious. Even at the stores, even though they trample you over, they say sorry. But you got the music, Christmas trees, all of these things are just the sign of everyone getting excited for a big event. The most important event that ever happened in history, that was the birth of Christ. You know, donations are up this time of year all around the world because of the Christmas spirit. But the big thing I like the most is glorifying Jesus. A lot of people ask me, glorifying Jesus, how does any of these things glorify Jesus? Anybody know? Good, you're the guys that keep asking me. So we're going to talk about that right now. But as fun as this stuff is, some people want to be a wet blanket. Some people want to say, you know, you want to celebrate Christmas? You go over there, over by yourself, don't make a lot of noise, you know, and let us be as we are, and you can celebrate your Christmas over there. And there's other people, another group over here is saying, you know, all of this stuff isn't true. There really was, you know, Christmas wasn't on December 25th, and it has nothing to do with Jesus, and so it's really not Christmas. It's not really for Christmas. Well, that's what I want to talk about today. You know, interesting, this week, my son Lee over there who was singing, he took us to Cirque du Noël. Has anybody ever seen that? It's an awesome show where these guys are doing acrobats and things with their body that you would not believe. I mean, climbing up, climbing down, swinging around, no neck. And they're swinging through the air. It was amazing. And about halfway through, I had to go down for a refreshment. So I went downstairs. I'm standing in line. And the lady in front of me, the lady and the husband in front of me, were complaining about the show because the guys didn't have a shirt on. They were so focused on what they were wearing or not wearing that they didn't see the performance. They didn't see the meet. They didn't enjoy the whole show, the whole performance. It was just so awesome. Are we like that sometimes? Are we like we want to see this, but we don't want to. We want to be the wet blanket. I hope I'm never the wet blanket, but if I am, I want you guys to tell me I'm going to change. So anyway, when you come to my house, my home, the first thing Nancy puts there right by the door is the nativity scene. That's the first thing you see. It's the essence of Christmas. There's toy soldiers. What do toy soldiers have to do with the nativity? You're going to see about Herod's soldiers. You have to wonder why the owner of the inn didn't let them in. I mean, they said there was no room at the inn. Is that enough of an explanation? You have a woman here who's about to give birth, and you say, no, I got no room. I mean, come on, don't you have a dining room? You can put something in the hallway. No, he didn't let Jesus into his house. But I believe it's because that's what God wanted. God usually gets what he wants. He wants to tell a story. And where you enter the story is important. We're going to enter the story at the manger. But let's imagine a real manger. Not this manger that you see, you know, the cutie little ones that you see in there. But a real one that's usually in a cave or a stone building with a feeding stone in the middle. This birth is valuable because the story that goes with it. We're all used to these iconic views of the manger, but these have been made pretty to fit stories to tell our children and to tell each other, but they become a part of us. let's go to the real manger. Jesus was born into this world, in a world where everyone, where the kings and the power were afraid of him. He was born into a world that wanted to kill him. Not later on, as soon as he was born. Herod's soldiers were sent out, and that's where the toy soldiers come from. Herod's soldiers were sent out to kill every child that was born at that time. Can you imagine mothers crying, babies being ripped away? But later on, the Bible draws our attention to an artifact that's not usually recognized. It's not just Mary and Joseph looking at the miraculous thing that just happened. The child of God came into their lives. But there's something more that the Bible really points out and a lot of people miss. So let's take away Joseph. All that's left is Mary and the baby. The baby is wrapped in a cloth. So let's take away the baby. Let's take away Mary. Now you have just the baby wrapped in a cloth. Now let's take away the baby. Don't get alarmed. Jesus is coming back. He's not gone forever. But after the baby's gone, what do you have left? You have this cloth. And the Bible draws attention to this. This is the cloth that Jesus was wrapped in when he was born. Later on, near the end of the story, this cloth comes back into the story. When Jesus was crucified and put into the tomb, they found the tomb empty, except for the cloth. That cloth is from the beginning to the end of the story. Did you ever wonder why the wise men bought burial spices to a baby shower? I mean, the gold is good to have, but, you know, frankincense and myrrh, that's for burials. But it's foreshadowing what he was going to do. Because Jesus came in this world to die. But he wasn't going to die by the soldiers. He was going to die his way, in his time, his purpose. And that is the true reason for the season. So you walk past the nativity scene in our house, and next thing you see is this Christmas tree. Where is the Christmas tree in the Bible? A lot of people ask me that question. Does anybody know? Okay, we got one child over there that knows. But really, I'll help you out with that. To see where the Christmas tree is in the Bible, you got to go back to Genesis. The whole biblical story starts in a tree lot. Excuse me, I got to turn up the phone. What's that? Let me just try this again. That's better. Everybody hear that? So, this whole biblical story starts in a tree lot. The Garden of Eden was full of trees. These trees bore fruit, and that was what God provided for them to eat, was the fruit of the trees. But our attention is drawn to two trees. The first one is the tree of good and evil. God forbid them to eat that fruit, or surely man will die. The second is the tree of life, the living tree of life. It was everlasting life. Unfortunately, Adam ate from the first and was thrown out of the garden so that he could not eat from the second. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let's go back. When God created the world, it was full of trees. There was no worship of trees. There was no druids. They didn't create the trees. God created the trees. When God built his house in Exodus, God commanded Moses to bring a tree into his house, the tabernacle, the temple. Guess what else? He commanded him to put candles on the tree so that it would light up the base of the tree so he could see the offerings and the gifts that were being made. He was then commanded to fresco the walls with evergreens, paintings of fruit, like we do stylized fruit on the tree today. For the same reason as God sent man, sent Jesus to earth so that we could see something, for that same reason, we needed a tree to show what was coming. No, they say, why is it December 25th? A lot of people think, hey, it wasn't December 25th. The majors, they were out in the fields. It had to be the spring. Actually, there's something on Netflix called The Bethlehem Star. I don't know if you've seen it, but it shows it was probably in the winter. But it doesn't matter. It was fitting to be in December. Because the winter, the earth looks like it's falling asleep. Looks like it's dying. It's dark every day. If you look out there, it's pretty dingy. But Jesus comes in, and he lights up the world. He takes us from the darkness to the light. He brings us from death to life. We look outside, all the trees, the leaves are gone. It looks like death, except for the evergreens. They're still there. But let's not see it as the world. Let's see it as God sees it. Adam ate the apple. He stole the apple from the tree of life, from the forbidden tree. But he couldn't put it back because it was inside him. As crazy as it sounds, the only way he could put back that apple is to put himself on that tree. Because that's where the apple was. But think about what Jesus did. Jesus came and he opened a path of putting that back onto the tree. Because he was the last Adam. Adam was the first Adam. Jesus was the last Adam, the last man that God created. It was his own son. Jesus did what Adam could not. He put himself back on the tree so he could overcome death, making us right with God. Jesus was God's blessed fruit, hung on the blessed tree. You remember the cloth that was in the beginning? Nicodemus brought that cloth back into the story at Jesus' burial. He brought frankincense and myrrh. Why? To wrap the body of Jesus, who was put to death on the tree, just as he was wrapped when he was born. The fruit that first Adam stole was nailed back on the tree by Jesus. When he hung himself on the tree, on the wooden cross, he atoned for our sins. He reconciled us with God. He pierced the darkness. You see, just at the right time, when we were still sinners, Jesus died for us. He died for our sins. So when you see Christmas trees, I want you to see a cross, an empty cross, hundreds of empty crosses that don't have to be used because of Jesus' finished work. He paid the price that we could never pay, we could never repay. So when you see the Christmas tree, see the empty cross. And when you see the empty cross, see the cloth in the empty tomb. When you see the empty tomb, do what his disciples did. Tomb is empty, just the cloth. So what did they do when they saw this? They turned and ran. Run and tell the story of Christmas. Tell the story of Jesus, how he is still alive. That's part of the meaning of Christmas. You can see here, this is Exodus 25. This is when God commanded Moses to bring a tree into his house, to put candles on the tree, to light it, to paint fresco on the walls, of firs, gold. I think that's where the tradition comes from. What about Santa? That's right. A lot of people, you know, say, man, Santa is bad because he eclipsed Jesus. Everybody wants to go. How many people have taken their picture with Santa this year over here? How about with Jesus? No? Nobody? For that reason, a lot of people call Santa, they rearrange the letters, they call him Satan because of that. But where is Santa in the Bible? You know the jingle, you better watch out, you better not cry. He knows when you've been free. You know, he knows everything. It's kind of like God, but he's not God. He's not God. The real Santa. Kids want to know about the real Santa? The real Santa was a bad dude. My kids like to say he's sick. Or as my kids also say, or as our grandchildren also say, let me explain something to you. Santa was a tough guy. If you think you're defending the faith by scowling at Christmas things that we have and the traditions that we have, let me introduce you to a real defender of the faith. Let's look behind the beard. Let's look under the red suit. Let's look under that red cap. I'm going to show you the real defender of the faith, the real Santa. But you have to imagine it in a little different way. You have to imagine it sort of like the Lord of the Rings, a ringsy kind of Santa, ready for a fight, ready to defend the faith. That's the real Santa. His real name was Nicholas, a devout Christian. He was a bishop of Myra. Myra is near the modern-day Turkey, where Turkey is today. He became rich when his parents died. He became famous for his generosity to children. He was always going to the places where kids are and giving out presents and something that means no. Okay, but he was famous for that. So forget about the North Pole. This is what he was doing. But he lived at a very critical time in Christian history. It was AD 325. He was there at the Council of Nicaea. The Council of Nicaea produced the Nicaea Creed. That is the creed of the profession of faith used by churches around the world. It proclaims Jesus to be the God on earth. This was only issued because of Nicholas. There was a movement called the Gnostic movement. They were denouncing the deity of Jesus. They were reducing Jesus to a mere man. I was raised like that. I was raised a Christian Scientist, and we were taught that Jesus was just a man. Well, Nicholas was having nothing to do with this. So he had people waiting at the inn to tell him when this guy Arius, who was the leader of this movement, would be there. So he found out he was there, and he made his way to the inn. When he arrived, he heard Arius reducing Jesus to a mere man. Nicholas believed strongly that Jesus was God's son, was God come to earth. But people were listening to him. He was saying, think about it. How could Jesus be God? Well, Nicholas heard enough of this battle. He would be the shepherd that protects the flock from the wolves. Babbled on. Finally, Nicholas had a seat. Guess where he sat? Right next to Arius. The official record says that at that critical moment, Nicholas put him to shame. But he didn't do it just by words alone. He did it by action. Arius got inflamed. This pastor could not go soft on the truth or stay quiet for political correctness. There was a fight that ensued. He put Arius down, but not before he got beat up pretty bad. And not everyone in the council was happy about this. They weren't happy about his less than jolly actions. They denounced his title. They took away his title. But the people were so impressed by his faith, by his strength, that they sainted him. And that's why we call him Saint Nick, Saint Nicholas. These were critical times. So he returned back home. He became legendary. His fame spread quickly. In France, he was known as Par Noël. In Sweden, they called him Thompson. In Norway, he was known as Joel Nissen. Netherlands called him Sinterklaas. I never noticed that this was. I'm gonna put this in there. This one? Yeah. So, Mr. Christian, the guy you think is distracting the world from Jesus was actually the guy that saved us. That saved the deity of Jesus. He didn't save it, but he let everyone know that's what Jesus was. So with all of this, we should celebrate. We should rejoice. The Bible, some people say, you know, Christians, you should just sit and pray, be a little quiet. You shouldn't be out celebrating about this. This is Christmas after all. But the Bible is full of celebrations. David returning to the ark was dancing in the street. Wedding festivals are all over the Bible. Passovers end in a feast. On the fifth day of the seventh month, God tells his people to make a rejoicing party. Jesus was at a party. He turned the water into wine. I think that's a pretty good party trick. Psalms alone tells us to rejoice 38 times, just in Psalms. Jesus was often asked, why are you feasting when everyone else is fasting? Because it was important to celebrate that while he was here. Jesus even pushed up Passover by one day so that he could delve right into the Last Supper. So sometimes you have to be humbled to appreciate the good. Sometimes you have to get down on the floor and look at the Christmas like the child would. Looks like a city, the New Jerusalem. At the base of the tree of life with lights over it shining bright, cleansed by the blood of Christ. Prosperity, it shows prosperity and joy, stacked, wrapped, and ready to be opened, sitting at the base of a tree. And that's not bad stewardship. God has been giving man gifts at the base of the trees all through the Bible. Abraham was given a son at the oaks of Mamre. Cedars of Lebanon were supplied for Solomon's temple. But let's not forget salvation that was given to us at the base of the tree. So let's celebrate. I want everybody here to stand up, especially you children. Jeremy and Jason, come on up here. Okay, if you know the words to this song, you can sing them, but I want everybody dancing, okay? Because this is a celebration. Are you ready? Do your river dance thing. Ready? presence. Oh, in a statue day. Come on, dance, boys. Jeremy. There you go. It won't stay in. That's like close. Then you're right up. This will just die out.
Oh,
oh, oh, come on, stand. Oh, 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 yeah, you can do that one. Come on. Where's all the kids? Come on. Come on, dance. Jump, 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 jump. Come on, jump, jump. Come on. Dance marathon. Come on, let's go. Who can do that one? Ooh, do you know this one? Can you do that one? Come on, Holly. Come on. All right, you. Sal, come on, Sal. Woo! There you go. Celebrate. Whoa, whoa. Come on, man. Wait, 5 seconds.
Hello.
Oh, good.
What? I'm glad you all agreed,
Marty. Hey, man, let's give a hand to Ron and everybody else. Thanks for coming, everyone. Thank you, kiddos and adults and families and friends. Welcome to Grand Rapids Church. We're going to close it up with a communion. Before that, I want to share a story in the book of Luke. If you have a Bible with me, Thank you, Ron, for an amazing message. Great points, great pointers. But before we take the bread and the wine, I'm going to share a story about the angel in Luke chapter 1 approaching Zachariah and Mary. All right? So follow with me. Chapter 1, verse 5. Okay. Look at verse 8. Once in Zechariah.
Preparing the way of the Lord.
You think you'll be fired up?
Well,
said, I'm too old. I'm done. How can that happen? Can you believe God's promise? The angel said, I'm Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God. And now you will be silent and not be able to speak. After the day of passage, you will be true, and not be denied, but you will come to be saved.
That's scary. Okay, you know why? You won't be able to speak anymore. Silent. The Greek word for that is
So they were asking all the people in the congregation, hey, what happened in there?
Imagine me going back home,
meeting Elizabeth,
indicating what happened.
Think Zachariah and Elizabeth had a fight over that?
Husband, if you're the husband, they can't give you a one-on-one. They spoke the same thing, it's just the sign language. Let alone just saying you're going to have a baby one day. Get out of here.
They're going to have a good family time. They're going to have a good baby time. So they're going to start on the
home. No baby time. You know, it blows my mind how God speaks to you. You don't get this thing from God.
Scary. But
God really wants to. First job. Right there. For the next one, goes on, and so forward in the sixth month, that's when the angel Gabriel to Nazareth. The time gathered into worship, both in the hands and hands, and good. I guess, I guess. You are highly favored, the Lord is with you. Now, if somebody came and told me the Lord is with you, what would you do? Remember, the Lord is with you. The Lord is with you. What would you do? What would you do here, right? Well, let's see the enemy's response. They were greatly troubled. Well, that was good. I don't know what you
before we take the bread and the wine, I want us to think about our lives.
You look at Mary, she hesitated or was fear. She changed our heart.
That's how God is supposed to live.
Then he overlooks our neighbors and he overlooks.
Yeah, I know you get it, but they overlook. I really want to encourage you today. Be close out to the
community.
We have three
more. I want you to reflect the next 1 week before we get to 2019. In the area of my life, it is a child where you see him as a dog. We have better believers now. The more we see that,